Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to The Whisker Report. We're a new podcast dedicated to helping anyone in the pet industry, whether you're in animal welfare or a for-profit pet company, to get some PR and buzz for your nonprofit or business. Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Tan, one of the hosts of the show, along with my buddy Alexandre Ricard, a French gal who hails now from Vancouver and travels the world in the hopes of spaying and neutering stray cats. Bonjour, Alex.
Bonjour, tout le monde. Today is an episode very close to my heart, and we have really, really great guests. But first of all, let me introduce you to Mark Winter of Pet Life Radio, who's the man who gets us to you each and every week. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good in our 82-degree weather while you guys are freezing up north.
Not jealous at all.
Yes. Well, you guys have nothing to complain about because it's like 11 degrees here, something insane. But of course, we're Fahrenheit, and then you guys and our guests are Celsius. So, you know, I don't know why the U.S. is the only one to use this weather system.
You just like to be different.
Yes, I would definitely agree that many Americans like to be different. Hey, Mark, what kind of shows do you have coming up on the network?
A lot of holiday shows coming up. People are doing gifts for pets and fun things to do for pets and all kinds of presents for pets. So that's what we got going on a lot of shows.
That's so cool. Well, you got to tune in, go on the Pet Life Radio Network website, and you can see all the other podcasts. I mean, Mark, there's like how many of them you have on there? 80? 100?
Right now we have 83 podcasts on Pet Life Radio. On one of our shows on Obehave with Arden Moore, we just had Marianne Leone on, who was in The Sopranos.
Oh, wow.
She was on with her husband, Chris Cooper, who you've seen in a lot of movies and TV shows. That was fun.
That's so cool.
Never know who's going to show up here.
Yeah, I know. So like and subscribe, everybody. Or wait, no, that's YouTube. Sorry.
You can like and subscribe here, too.
You need to subscribe. And then, you know, give us a comment or two, because that helps us in the world of algorithms. So, but anyways, we're so honored to be part of the Pet Life Radio Network. And you can do PR for yourself. And Alex, Mark, and I are going to show you each and every week.
So this week, we're going full Vancouver, and I'm so excited to have two incredible women on our show. They're the two women behind Vocra. Vocra is one of the most famous cat rescues in Vancouver, and it stands for Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. I met Karen and Maria a couple of weeks ago when I sent them a message to learn more about the TNR efforts, because as you all know, that's what I'm passionate about. So Maria and Karen, thank you so much for being on our show. Thank you for taking the time to come and talk to us.
Well, thank you.
Can you tell me a bit more how you started Vocra and like, who are you?
Well, I can start with that. Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue was founded in the year 2000 to address the homeless population of stray and feral cats. Trap, neuter, return. In the Vancouver area, which is Vancouver, BC, Canada. And since then, we've also expanded to other municipalities, Burnaby, Surrey, within close proximity to us, and rescuing the homeless stray cats and fixing the ferals so that their population stops. So virtually, Vocra in 25 years has virtually reduced feral cats to just a handful in Vancouver and Burnaby.
That's incredible.
Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of hard work. But then again, you know, we both, Karen will explain in a minute, but both of us, Karen and myself, volunteered for the local shelter in Vancouver, which is the SPCA, 10 years before we started Vocra. And Karen, being a doula, was my major bottle feeder And I worked in the hospital, ESPCA hospital, with their foster program, expanding it and making it solid for them. Man, I saw a lot of orphan kittens come in. You know, there were never enough foster homes. Many of them were euthanized. The moms and kittens went to the shelter. They would get sick with disease. It was very heartbreaking. And we one day just sat in my car and thought, why don't we start our own kitten rescue? So that's why
it's called... How hard can it be? How hard can it be, really?
So we originally started with newborn kittens that were found outside that needed bottle feeding, which was our specialty, and then stray kittens and moms. So we initially started as a kitten rescue. Many of these kittens were taken to local shelters, died because of disease transmission. So we set up a network of foster homes to keep them safe and disease-free. And that was so important. Karen can explain more about that. And then adopted them into loving homes. That was the first year. I think we took in about 250 or so. And the second year, when the local shelter called us to come and get them, we discovered the kittens were coming from the same addresses.
Oh, many.
The previous year, I thought, well, I'll go see what's going on. You know, why isn't the mother being brought in? I was very naive, like no idea what a feral cat was or trapping or anything. So I went to the address and I go in the yard and there's like 50 cats there, sleeping on the back patio. You know, it was just mind-blowing how this happened. And I found out that the mothers were never brought in, or none of them were spayed and neutered, because they were born outside, had no socialization, and therefore you couldn't pick them up and put them in a carrier and take them to the local shelter, which was that shelter's mandate. You had to bring a cat to them. So I did some snooping on Alley Cat Allies, and I found out that these are feral cats. And I contacted some cat ladies in Vancouver that I knew went around feeding strayed cats. And they showed me how to trap, how to buy a trap, how to take these cats into a vet who knows how to sedate a feral cat right in the trap. And what we would do is she showed me how to... With this clinic was great, by the way. They would bring in like 6 different veterinarians on a Saturday, and I would bring them perhaps 20, 30 cats, and they would fix them all. And then what do you do with them after, right? You don't bring them to your house. So I found a heated garage, and I set up big wire and plastic dog kennels to put after they've been fixed. They go into a cat carrier. The cat carrier goes into the kennel, litter box right beside it, food right beside it for a few days, because I could even do that in the winter.
Can you tell us, what is the situation in Canada for animal welfare versus the United States? Like, the U.S. has got to be the number one in funding animal welfare groups. How is that for you? And how did you get all of these cats and their surgeries paid for?
Well, at first, you know, if you start a cat rescue, you have to have some money, right? So we had all our friends and family as foster parents. We had a few of the bottle feeders come over from the SPCA to us, because we didn't want babies and mums and kittens going into the SPCA anymore. And they didn't want them, basically.
No.
You know, they
couldn't look after them.
Yeah. So it was great for them to refer people to us. But the thing is that money, right? Money. But a lot of these little old cat ladies, they did bottle drives and book sales and garage sales, and they raised money for their own spaying and neutering of these stray cats themselves. So they showed me how to do it too. And they had sort of an organization where I could apply for some of that money. So most of the time in those first few years, they paid for it. All our friends and family chipped in, and we did basic grassroots fundraising, but it's changed since then a lot.
Yeah. Tell us how you promote your rescue for the other rescues, especially that are listening to this. It's overwhelming, right? When you're an animal rescuer, how did you promote the organization so you could keep the funding coming in?
We got onto Facebook early because we could connect with other groups, and it really helped because if we were having a fundraiser, we would put it up and people would support us. We did a lot of begging. We had wonderful vet that just supported us like mad and let us carry an amount for a bit because they trusted us, and we always paid up our bills. So that was important to do every couple of months, catch up. And we did adoptions, but you lose in rescue, you lose on every animal you bring in because you're putting so much into them. I was getting called to the SPCA to pick up 2-3 times a day sometimes in the summer. Like, these colonies were, most of them were 25 and above cats. And so we were just clearing them out and keeping going and getting a feeder if they were staying there, making sure they were okay once we released them. You know, nowadays you get cats that are sort of semi-tame a lot of the time, but these cats were mad. They were mad, and they'd had a lot of kittens, and they were tired and worn out and, you know, covered with fleas and everything else. So we would just beg and get the word out on Facebook and on different chat groups, and did, you know, bake sales, compost sales we had. We had everything you can think of while at the same time doing all this rescue work. And with the kittens, it's every 2 hours, of course, and through the night. So we had way too many kittens in our homes at the time. We've made strict rules about that now, but we were lucky. You know, for a long time, we were lucky in that disease didn't take off on us. But it's so easy to happen. And when it happens, that's expensive. So we just gradually found, I'm sorry about my bird, he's talking. We started looking for grants. We learned how to search for grants. We got a few more people. But for years, Maria, we had, 10 people at the most working together with us. Like, there was not the big organization we have now. We have kept many of our fosters from the beginning. You know, we have fosters that have been with us for 15 years. And it's so great to see them, you know, and to still keep going with the fosters and knowing what they're like with the foster kittens and cats. So it's masses of now.
I think the main thing was getting out into the community, Mary, is when I heard there would be an event in Vancouver, like Canada Day down at Granville Island. And I mean, hundreds of people would come to that event. We set up a table, and the kids' market let us set up a table, and we had some newborn kittens there, which was a good attraction.
Big draw.
People were walking by, a lot of tourists, a lot of people from the United States who actually were volunteering for cat rescues. So we had a donation jar, but these events were so important to give our brochures out, to ask for foster homes, to ask for volunteers, that's where we got the majority of our supporters.
So it was really like you went to a lot of community events as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then using the media, the news media, we would put out press releases. We would have them come and fill them. Interview us all the time. We'd send out press releases about the situation. So our message was getting out there about spaying and neutering. Our message was getting out there to the public. If you find a stray cat, or if you're feeding stray cats, please call us.
All right. You know what? We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, Alex and I are going to talk to Karen and Maria more about how they get the word out. And it's so amazing that you guys send out press releases, because that's the way to do it. We'll be right back.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
back with Karen and Maria, the two founders of Vocra. So you guys said you were sending out press releases. How did you learn that? Do you guys have any education in PR or marketing?
No, we had nothing.
I did have a friend who was a journalist.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes, we did have her.
And she showed me how to do it. You just look up each media, like if it's your local TV station or radio stations, you look up their emails or their phone numbers and you tell them about you in about a paragraph is what they need to know. What you do, what your results are, how you're helping the cats, how you're helping the community, and send some pictures and video along with it. And they got back to us right away and they were very keen on doing it. At that time, we also had newspapers, and newspapers aren't common anymore. You know, no one gets a newspaper, but there still are some community newspapers. And that was really important to get them mm-hmm. on board, because these community newspapers were delivered to people's homes. So they may not have seen you on TV or don't have Facebook or internet, and they would see us, or we would take an ad out in them about supporting us, donate, and a little donate sticker.
Yeah.
We're going to mail it. You know, you hit the nail on the head. Community papers are still the lifeblood of journalism. And actually, here in the United States, our community papers are really, really well read. Now, you guys are lucky that your papers are actually delivered to people. In the United States, most community papers are now at the local grocery store or city hall or some sort of a public place. But when you're trying to reach a specific community, you guys nailed it. Like, community papers are it. I have another question. So what do you think is more effective, like being on TV or being on in print or web? What, or is it a combination? What do you think is most successful for a cat rescue your size?
I can answer that one. Whenever we were on TV, we would have a rush of support, and usually we were on for an event coming up. So we would get a lot of people coming to the event, but we would get a rush of that. And then we'd get a rush of, can you help us? We've got 20, 30 cats in our backyard. So we'd have more work right away too. So it was back and forth, you know, it was a double-edged sword there, but it got people understanding that we would help and we would come out. It might take a little bit, but you know, there was a way to get things sorted because people didn't know what the heck to do. They'd call different agencies and nobody would come out and trap. Nobody was doing that. They'd just give food or support that way. So the colonies just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it astounds me how many there were. We found that most of the colonies were on a map. We had a map of Vancouver. And they were right in a specific path through Vancouver in an area where people moved a lot, where there was a lower income, people weren't getting their animals fixed. So you could really pinpoint the area that you would find these massive groups. One of our last colonies is just, I think it was last year, wasn't it, Maria, the car one, and they were the fattest ferals you've ever seen. They were in the back of a car repair place, and those guys looked after them all these years. They weren't tame. They wouldn't come to anybody, and they just gradually get less and less, you know, but they were well looked after, and it's really nice to see when people keep on being involved in helping the cats in their community.
The community, well, the people that we trapped at their residences became the caretakers to those cats. We provided them with dry food if they needed. And the thing we did was we gave lifetime care to those feral cats. So if they were ever sick or needed medical attention, we would cover those cats. So, you know, they would call me, you know, 10, 15 years later and, oh, he looks like he's going to die soon. Maybe you should come get him and we'll take him to get him euthanized and that sort of thing. I wanted to say something to you that you may not realize, but in Canada, this last year or more, we've been cut off from news media through the Facebook forum and Twitter. Facebook is you cannot post any links to your local TV station or news station. And this was done by Elon Musk when he took over, unfortunately. So the thing is that when people go on Facebook, you can actually Google your local TV station and find out when you watch their newscast that way. But you can't put a link on for a newscast on Facebook. Yeah.
That's got to be a Canadian thing.
Yes, it's only Canada that he did this to.
We don't get
Why?
It.
Well, because Google it.
We're going to have to definitely research that for you because we link to constantly. You know, to get our way around that is, you know, if you have friends in the United States that you can also make an administrator, that might be a way to get around. And then
or maybe use a VPN.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Using a VPN would be perfect. We're going to have to research that one because for our Canadian friends, that's important to know because I can tell you, like here in Minnesota, we had a situation where our local Humane Society could no longer afford to provide free spay and neuter for all of the stray and feral cats. Minnesota has a very extensive TNR programs, but they are lacking funding. So we held a big press conference here with multiple cat rescue organizations, and we ended up raising about $16,000 in one night because we got all the media there. And then to further it, we put the link to that coverage on the rescue group's Facebook page and everything. And that garnered even more money. You know, it trickled in down the line. But that is very crucial. And I'm really sad to hear that. That is crazy. I did want to ask you about, do you have any events or gala events or fundraising events besides like the little fundraisers that people do individually?
Well, our community and our supporters are VOCRA people. We call it the VOCRA Vortex because everybody joins down the vortex.
I love that.
But Karen will explain our major fundraiser of the year is a walkathon where we ask the community to come and every single one of our 600 volunteers come. And it's a great event every September. And Karen will tell you all about that.
Yeah, tell us, Karen.
It's the big one, and we build up to it. We have it down by the beach, and it's a lovely day usually. Sometimes it rains. We keep going, but we do online gathering of pledges, and the people that are walking gather pledges for us. This year, we really ramped it up because we are, you know, funds are just, I don't know if it's the same there, but everything doubled after COVID.
Yes.
And the amount we're paying now for spays and neuters is outrageous, even with our society rate, not to mention all the cats that come in that are injured or sick that need the help. So we just started talking honestly about how bad it is and what the differences are since COVID. A lot more people have cats they can't afford. A lot more people are not getting them fixed because there's just no money to cover it. Housing is dreadful here. So trying to push for pets-friendly rentals is really important to us. All the things added up to make it just a horrible year for us, and we're way down in our donations. So when we had the walk this year, we kind of doubled what we usually make. So it was really great. It caught us up, but it covers maybe 2 months of veterinary costs. We're looking at $70,000 a month for veterinary costs, and it kills you. The vets try and help us, and lots of them give us way better deals, you know, but we have so many very ill, very sick cats come in, old cats. We need medications, all that. And it's just gone up in price so much. So the walkathon was great. We got a lot of people out. We made a lot of money. But we had to say to people, yes, we've made a lot of money, but here's how long it will last. This is what it's covering.
I think that is a great news story.
It's important.
You should be putting out a press release to your local media and tell them about the ramifications of what will happen
if you don't get more funding. You will see. So I'm a former crime reporter, so my head kind of goes that way. So it's always like, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. If you're dead, I'm live. So what you want to do is you should use fear and loathing and compassion as a way to get people to donate. So I would put out a press release that says, you know, explaining that your funding is way down. You've doubled your fundraising, but we still don't have enough to. And then write, you know, people really want to understand. So write down how much does it cost for each spay neuter and how many cats you have. And then talk about this is where you should get them is like, you're going to see more cats on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be worse if they don't
exactly
and keep us going. You know, we got a cat in the other day that's going to cost us thousands, and it was injured by a troubled owner. And it's heartbreaking. You know, I went up to visit it and it's heartbreaking. You know, this person just lost it. And this is going to be a huge vet cost. Now, we can't, of course, name the person. It's a problem. But, you know, we can show those x-rays and that leg is, you know, the legs are broken because of this, badly broken. We've stopped being, and that's what we say to all our new media people is, no more cute kittens and, you know, you show them once in a while. But what you show is what we're actually faced with. And how hard it is for us. We keep a brave face, but those of us that are seeing the cats as they come in or the situation they're in when they get trapped, it gets to you. You know, a woman asked me yesterday that was delivering cat food here, how do you do it? And I said, well, for the first few years, I fell apart all the time. But you have to, if you're going to stay in rescue, you have to get tough. You have to be able to go, okay, this is horrible. But we want to change it and we're going to keep going. Because if you don't keep going after, with all our 24 years of experience, who is going to get that? You know, it took a while to grow some tough, I don't know what you would call them, scales. And, you know, we did. And we have to be able to carry on no matter what we're looking at. So it's time to tell the public what we're looking at.
And we have been doing that for our walk-a-thon.
Yeah.
We chose a mascot of Rennie who was FIV, had a lot of teeth out. He had a broken jaw. It was really bad photo. We told the brutal story and how much it cost.
Yeah.
And people were willing to send that money because we told them it's not just Rennie. It's, you know, hundreds like
you know.
Him. Hundreds like him. And it is.
Do you get any government funding?
Oh, let me tell you about that. No.
Yeah.
There is a EV grant in British Columbia, which any charity can apply for. And we do usually get the gaming grant every year. But it doesn't, you know, if it's $40,000, that's just a little bit about a little bit of our spay and neutering. Like I said, our veterinary bills for the year are $700,000.
Wow. So much money.
So back to that question, though, Mary, is there in Vancouver, we've never gotten any support from the mayor and council from the city for what we're doing. They have a small little grant. I think it's $5,000 for those organizations that virtually do animal control in Vancouver. But we didn't get the grant last year.
We're the pound for the cats. Nobody else does it.
Yeah. And also we have a city pound, but it's only for dogs because we don't have cat bylaws here in Vancouver.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. We've been doing all the bylaw management of cats. But if somebody dies or overdoses or has a police
fire,
taken to jail or a fire, the police bring the cats to the city pound. The city pound can't keep them because they only are set up for dogs and there's no cat bylaws. So we take them. The SPCA won't take them. We take them. So I'm really upset with my mayor and council. So what I've done is I've taken all our statistics from Vancouver only because I'm going to the Vancouver mayor and council. So I've got the stray statistics. And I figured out it's $375 for each cat that comes into us to fix it, vaccinate, deflea, deworm. Now, that doesn't cover the cost of the food. It doesn't cover the cost of dental work, which most of them need. They need to have rotten teeth. the injuries, the horrific abscesses, you know, broken bones, blah, 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 that cat's ending up more like 3,000, you know. But it's 375, and I added up the actual number of just strays in Vancouver that we took up from January to now, and they owe us $50,000. So we're writing a letter saying, you know, we are virtually doing animal control for you. We require $50,000 a year for our veterinary bills for these 100 and some cats, right? So we'll see how that goes.
You know, what you could do is do a grassroots campaign where you are targeting your elected leaders. And I don't know if you've met with each individual person. It's much easier to get what you want when you meet with your representatives individually.
That's right. And our provincial too, provincial MLAs. Yeah.
Mary, I have a question PR-wise as well, because so as Karen mentioned, Vancouver pet policy for even like for finding housing is really bad. So many buildings are, you know, anti-pets. So when you have a cat or dog and you want to find a house, sometimes you end up giving up the pet because you can't find the housing. Is there anything Vocra as like the Men Cat Rescue in Vancouver can do to try to, I don't know, push the government to change the law PR-wise? Because you worked in government as well. So do you have any tips on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Is you also want, you want to work with the homeless advocates?
Yes.
There's a lot of homeless advocates. So now there is a national conference here in the United States that I would suggest you call it. It's called My Dog is Home. It's a conference of government advocates as well as animal welfare folks. It's a lot of government officials, and they come together and brainstorm different ideas to solve this housing issue. Because here in the United States, a lot of, especially here in Minnesota, most of the animals that we get locally are because somebody couldn't keep it in the housing. The apartment didn't allow it. And so they've really also worked with the rental communities and the rental advocates to explain the situation. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, it also takes responsible pet ownership. But a lot of the problems that they're quoting, you know, it happens with little children too, right? The noise and everything. And so I think you've got to get out of the animal welfare space and team up with your housing advocates, your racial justice advocates, because you're all coming from the same, because a lot of the people that lose their homes are the ones, you know, who don't have, they tend to be the under-resourced folks, the people that don't have a lot and they don't have a lot to work with.
It's heartbreaking this year.
Yes.
How many, I do the info line, so I get all the begging, pleading, crying emails and phone calls, and the things that are happening to people in this city are just outrageous, and they won't go into care or they won't get away from an abusive situation because of the animals. We always take our own Vocra cats back, but we can't take every cat. So what we're doing a lot in the last 2 years is working with the other rescues. We take certain things and they know that and look after them. They take different ones, and we all, I spend a lot of my days just trying to reach out to other groups and say, look, there's this lady, you know, she's being kicked out of her housing and she has a 14-year-old cat that she loves. And it's just, oh my God, the tears that come in the door when we can't find a place for the cat. It's so heartbreaking. It's just wrong. You know, this is this person's life and they have to give it up in order to have a roof over their head. And that's wrong. That's, Vancouver is a big mess with housing, really big mess.
And Vancouver's one of the wealthiest communities in the world, right?
That's sort of a misnomer because it's not the wealthiest. There are some very wealthy people here, but the majority are middle class, working, and poverty, actually. In the last few years, the housing prices have risen so high that now a one-bedroom apartment is $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
Apartment is $1 million.
I bet it doesn't even count the pet fee that they would charge.
No, and then the pet deposit is half of your deposit. But the rent a one-bedroom is around $3,000, $3,100 per month.
Really?
Nobody can afford it when welfare is, you know, $1,000 a month.
That's amazing.
Nobody can afford
our
it.
Our community
so many are becoming homeless. Many people have moved into these subsidized housing, but it's not really a nice subsidized housing apartment building. It's a one room called single room occupancy on what some people call Skid Row. And it's just awful, awful. So a lot of people are giving up their pets because the landlords want more money. And every year those rents are jumping. He wants more money. So he's going to renovict them. He's going to do renovations. So he evicts them and then they can't find a place to afford.
Well, once again, those are the stories you need to tell the media.
It's in the media every day about the homeless situation and its very story. But the government really isn't doing anything about it. They're building all these, the province is building all these apartment buildings. They're not building them. They're allowing these apartment buildings to be built, 20 stories or so. But those apartments are going to go for $1 million a year, to buy. So the lower income and the middle class working person can't afford one.
Right.
In Ontario, it's the law that you can have a pet in your rental. Here, it is not the law. The SPCA province-wide has been trying to get it legalized where landlords can't refuse a pet. But we have a very strong landlord lobby here who's not allowing it. And our premier of our province is not taking this on, although, you know, we've just been beating it.
Right.
They just won't do it.
Well, we are almost out of time. I hate to cut you off. There's so much more to talk about. And, you know, this is just heartbreaking. And I know what Volcra is going through. Many other rescues are going through. I do think, you know, the U.S. has a good system. The U.S. is not flawless, though. And I know I'm going to get mail from other cat rescuers who say it's terrible. But, you know, we really sympathize with everybody out there. And Alex, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, we should fight the government for the pet policies. So if you guys need help, I'm here because I've got a cat and I live in a non-pet friendly building. So I'm illegal right now.
Uh-oh.
Yes. And Alex, you commented how difficult it was for you to find a place to live in Vancouver.
Yeah. And that's how I ended up being in a non-pet friendly building because there was none that were available for Tzatziki and I. So we had to make a choice and it was to try to not get caught. And, you know, I'm touching wood, I'm touching everything. But yeah, we need to change that. So if you guys need help, Mary and I are here. And if we can help you in any way, we will.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts? Where can they find you and send you donations and everything and all of that?
Well, just remember the phrase Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue. And if you Google that, you'll come to our website, Facebook, Instagram. We have our own personal pages too. Alexin is one of my Facebook friends. We have what's in Canada, it's called Giving Tuesday. And nice. All the rescues put up their video, their fantastic video pleading for money with our sad stories. So that's going to come out on Tuesday.
All right. We wish you so much luck and you know, keep doing what you're doing. We know it's hard work. We know it's really depressing at times, but you know, you're changing the world for these cats and the people who love them too. And so we really, really appreciate and salute you for what you do.
Thank you so much for your support. And we'll hit you up on any ideas you have.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of that, that's a wrap for this show. We're so excited to be doing this for all of you out there who are just pounding the pavement trying to get publicity for either your rescue or your pet business. If you have a question you want us to answer, reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook under The Whisker Report, and we're going to try to answer it in a future podcast episode. So as we always say, bark loud and purr smart. See you later, everyone.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.